Welcome to All the Therapies.
We're two clinicians who try out different therapeutic practices
so you can find the right type of healing for you.
I'm Abby Crum.
I'm Mona E. Shaker.
And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
Thanks for joining us. Let's jump in now. Hello, everybody, and welcome. We are super, super excited for today's episode. We are interviewing Kaylin Kiki Diaz. She is a mindset and confidence coach and also a licensed therapist. And please check out the previous episode if you want to hear about my experience with confidence coaching. But welcome. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, same. So can we start with a brief introduction, who you are, your specialty, how long you've been in the field, et cetera?
Sure. So as you guys heard, my name is Kaylin Kiki Diaz. You can call me Kaylin or Kiki. I don't mind either way. So I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in California. And I also recently, about 2 years ago, also took on confidence and mindset coaching. So I've been in the psychology field for about 8 years, almost nine. I've been licensed for almost two. So I worked full-time while I was, you know, getting my license. And so I haven't been licensed as long, but I've been working in private practice for almost 8 years and being in the field for a really long time.
You're focused on confidence coaching. So how did this become your niche?
Sure. So when I was in therapy, I worked in different internships, as you both know, and had a lot of different experiences. And when I started private practice, most of my clients happened to be women. That wasn't something that I chose. When I started out in the beginning, I didn't really have a niche. And I started working with women. And what I noticed really quickly is that a lot of these women, due to past experiences or what they were taught at home, develop these, what I like to call like default patterns of way of coping. And as they became adults, they were still really relying on those default ways of coping. And it wasn't working for them anymore. It was making them feel trapped or really making them have a lot of judgments about who they are as a person. And it really affected their confidence, how they showed up in relationships, how they showed up at work, how they showed up as parents. And so I just saw such a theme of women really struggling with confidence, who they were, who they wanted to be, not even knowing who they were. Right. And it bothered me because I think as women, we're such powerful beings. We're so intuitive. We were powerful in numbers. We're just, I mean, honestly, I think we're pretty awesome. And so I really thought, this is where I really want to go with this. I really want to dive into how we get into these defaults, who teaches us this way of coping or behaving, or who teaches us these patterns, how to really kind of reparent ourselves, heal ourselves. And that's how I got into inner child work as well, which I combined with confidence coaching, because I just wanted women to really start to live more authentically themselves, or just even begin to explore who they are and have fun with it. So that's how that all started. And then I translated that into coaching, but I also do that very much in my therapy as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I love that. And I love how you say that the default setting, because that's so true. Because there's expectations. I mean, there's so many things that happen in our life that we kind of learn to self-edit and mold our ways so we could maybe avoid future rejection, whatever that is. And it works. And then up to a certain point, it stops working. And in fact, it starts to like kind of backfire. So I like that you say like almost being like looking deeply into those default settings and see if it's working anymore. So I love how you said that. So a lot of what you're saying could feel very therapeutic. So I'm curious about like, how do you differentiate coaching versus therapy?
That's such a good question. And I get it all the time. So I like to be very careful when I answer this question, because I think in a traditional sense, let me answer it in a traditional sense. I think therapy is evolving a ton. And I think, as you both know, I think you're probably seeing that even from when I started as an intern, I feel like it's evolved a ton. But traditionally, therapy would be more like talk therapy, processing why we do what we do, understanding like the depths of what we learned and how to process that. And then coaching is more like directive and uses a lot more different modalities. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the case now, because I see a lot of therapy that's directive. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of therapy that is involving all different types of modalities. Right. I'm sure that's why you guys started this podcast, because I think we want to let people know that therapy can look very different now. But that is the traditional sense. And I'd say coaching is much more directive. And for me, it's really involved. My clients, I have weekly check-ins, and we're always like, I'm always talking to them. There's kind of a lot more contact with the client than once a week. But again, that doesn't mean that I wouldn't have contact with a therapy client if that's what they needed. It just depends. Yeah. Also, what allows for coaching, which I'm sure we talk about, is you're able to see more people. So in California, you both know as a therapist, we have to practice in the state we're licensed. And I don't do it exactly the same. I want to be very careful with that again, because I'm not encouraging everyone to just like coach anyone and really be doing therapy. Like, no, therapy has a reason and it's very important. But also I'm able to see people outside of California, which is really great if they're appropriate for coaching. I don't just say like, oh, we're doing therapy, but I'm going to see you outside. No, that's not legal. But if they're appropriate, I can see them. So that's also really great.
Yeah. And I think it really is about like understanding where somebody's at and what they need in that moment. And it's like therapy sometimes covers that, but sometimes it does, you know, and like we've probably had this with people that kind of have done the work of therapy. And it's like, there's still work to be done in a different way. And so sometimes people have worked with a therapist where they live, but now they're looking for something else that is kind of building on to that. Like, I think there's layers, right? And there's layers of kind of growth and building. And so, and I know, yeah, I mean, obviously doing this podcast, I'm interested in so many different modalities and I'm so curious, but it sounds like just from what we heard about Mona's session that you pull from a lot of like different modalities. And so like I know my way I got to that and like kind of the, how I put the puzzle pieces together, but how did you kind of like, what do you pull from and how did you kind of come up with your process based on some different modalities?
Sure. So I was trained psychodynamically, which you both know, but I'll just do like a really quick is just a belief that a lot of the ways we process as adults comes from our childhood and the things we learned from our childhood. I'd say that's probably the easiest way to describe that, right? Totally. Ladies. Okay. And then I also on my second internship was trained humanistically, which is the belief that we're not like dysfunctional human beings, that we're actually all whole and that we can come together. I'll say to my individual therapy clients, like, this is couples therapy actually with you and the parts of yourself that you've like learned to hide from the world. And we're just going to try to integrate those two so you can be a whole self. So I was trained therapeutically those two ways. And then I got a Reiki master who helped me with a lot of energy work and kind of like higher power and really being aligned with your higher power, the universe. And so that really helped me. We did a lot of hypnosis and meditation. And then I also did a lot of training on inner child work. And reparenting your inner child.
Yeah.
So those all combined are really kind of what I allow my process to be. So I believe that a lot of the ways in which we navigate the world have a ton to do with our younger selves and the things we were taught and how we learn to navigate the world based off what we were taught from our caregivers. And I also believe that, I mean, you guys, I think probably believe this as well. Like, we all experience trauma on some level. Right. And so I don't want to over explain too much because I know that both of you very much know this.
But the audience, I think it is good to explain for someone who might not know.
So, you know, trauma is on a spectrum. I mean, the definition technically is like experiencing a deeply distressing event, but that can happen once, that can happen throughout your childhood.
Right.
And as we experience that, especially as our younger selves, when we experience trauma, we process it based off of our developmental level. And a lot of the times we're processing that from a young age. And so we're internalizing that on a subconscious level because we believe it's really about us. And we also have to learn, because when you're younger, you're dependent. And so what's your most important thing? Survival and being able to depend on someone else. So you learn how to protect yourself from a young age based off of whatever has happened to you that's traumatic. What ends up happening is as we get older, we're still utilizing those same protection or those same ideas. We can't discern between what is the real threat and what is the perceived threat, right? And so we're just reacting on anything that feels similar to that traumatic experience with the same processing as we did when, say, we were 7 years old, because we had to protect ourselves, because, you know, we had to shut down, or maybe we had to take care of others. And so I started to see this a ton, right? And I started to say, okay, clearly there's a lot of inner child work that needs to be done. It is also very much on a subconscious level. When this person feels this similar experience and they can't discern between a real threat and a perceived threat, we're kind of, we've gone into the subconscious. And so I really wanted to integrate in my process talking through that process so that the person understands it. But also I do kind of hypnosis timeline work, which I'm sure Mona talked about in your guys' session, to go to the subconscious, because we have so much subconscious programming, and really kind of dig into what happened in that moment, how to go to your inner child in those traumatic moments and try to re-heal or reparent your inner child. And so if I'm making sense, that's the entire process. We talk through it as adults, and then we really do like a hypnosis subconscious level to try and clear and reparent some of those parts of ourselves. And then really just meeting my client and asking my client to meet them with a lot of like love and unconditional positive regard. That's kind of maybe a lot of some of the humanistic as well. Like, you're a whole self and you're not this dysfunctional thing. Like, it's okay. All parts of you are beautiful and all parts of you are worth looking at. So I try to take all of that and do it in each 50-minute session. Yes. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, totally. I think that's great.
Yeah, like getting into those layers, right? There's like the immediate, like what we see happening in front of us. And then there's like the programming, the historical pieces that relate to that as well. And that's why, so yeah, when I was talking about the sessions that I had with you, I think previously my conception of like, oh, confidence coaching, it's going to be like girl power and like, rah, rah, you got this girl. Like, I was just expecting that, confidence coaching. But it was a lot of inner child work that was really, really profound for me. So yeah, I'm curious about you, like to ask you, what do you think, like, how do you define confidence? How does that originate? Where is that rooted in? And where does it come from?
That's a good one. How long do you have? No, I'm just kidding. How long do we have? I believe now, I think we are taught about confidence. I do think we come out of the womb pretty confident. I mean, I watch old videos of myself, like that my parents would record, and I was just like, came out, you know, just like, I'm awesome. And we learn from society, like we get messages that really like challenge that. So I don't want to act like as if this is just something you come out of. I mean, I think we have to do a lot of work to get back to our true confidence. But for me, it's really about acceptance of oneself, unconditional positive regard of oneself, and love of oneself. And what I always say is to my clients that is most important is to really honor and accept, like truly accept your internal experience of the world. Now, I understand that just because you accept your internal experience doesn't mean that you show everybody, like externally, that you say everything you feel, right? That's where we have to like navigate, because just because we experience it internally doesn't mean that externally we show it. We always kind of look and go, okay, is that appropriate to say? Should I be saying that? And I think that's how we navigate the world. But I think what people do, because we learn what to do externally, is we do that same stuff internally. And you know you feel something, or you know something internally, and you'll go, that's not true, or I shouldn't feel that way, or I shouldn't be like that. And I think that that really chips away at our confidence. And so for me, on a deeper level, confidence really does come from embracing, acknowledging, and honoring your internal experience and accepting it and loving it and just internally saying, like, I can be my authentic self. My internal experience is real. I can trust myself. And it takes a lot of time to get there. So for listeners that are like, well, that sounds great. Like, I didn't, I had to learn all of this as well. You know, I didn't just come out being like, I had a lot of experiences in life that challenged that confidence or challenged my internal experiences. But I find the more I can just honor them, embrace them, play with them, see what I can do with them in the internal world, you know, outside of myself, I feel more and more confident because I'm just me and it's okay to be me. And that's what I want for more people.
Yeah, I think this idea that like confidence really comes from our view of ourself, not so much like our external way of being in the world, but it's like how much of ourselves we can accept, you know, and just expanding that more and more and more, like to like more layers, you know, like we probably all have some parts of ourselves we accept, but it's like, what about that other part, right? That you never want people to see, you know? Yes. And so when you can find acceptance for that, like I think naturally our confidence grows, right? Versus being like, I'm great. And like, I feel awesome. Because often like that type of what we call confidence is kind of like a mask, right? It's a persona. It's a defense.
Yes.
And so like, what is that true like internal confidence? Okay, cool. So who do you think would most benefit from confidence coaching? Do you think it's kind of anybody, or do you think it's good for people to be in a certain place? kind of internally to start? What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I would love to say it's for anyone because I would want anyone that has a desire to try it. I do think ideally it's best for someone who has been in therapy or some mm-hmm. other modality who has really been able to process why they are where they're at or mm-hmm. why they have these default behaviors or just have a better understanding of their behavior or family of origin patterns and kind of like how they got here, but still kind of like you had mentioned earlier, Abby, like still have like things just aren't quite changing. Engineer, they just can't quite get to acceptance, full acceptance of themselves, or just full is tricky because, like, do we really all fully accept ourselves? I'm not sure, but just feeling like really good about themselves, yeah. being able to kind of get over that hump. That a lot of my coaching clients will say, like, I understand why I do what I do, mm-hmm. I just can't get out of my own way. And it's yeah. like, okay, you're perfect, like,
yeah,
I've got this. Let's try something different. Let me challenge you here and there. I would say that would be the people I would say are the most ideal.
Okay, cool.
Yes. Nice.
Piggyback off of that, what would a typical session look like for you? Is it similar across the board or do you pick and choose kind of your tools in your toolbox?
Sure. I mean, as you saw, Mona, like we kind of went on the fast track because yes. I only had two sessions with you. But in general, my sessions are 50 minutes, as I mentioned. And in general, they are different. Depending on what the person brings to me is really where I'll go with it. I'd say in general, though, I start with saying what's not working in your life. What comes up? Why isn't that working? And then we'll also maybe say, like, if you could wake up one day and have everything that you wanted and not even material, feelings, like, what would you want to feel? I'm really big on feeling because people will say, like, well, I'd love like a new home. Okay, but why? What would that new home mean to you? Safety. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what does safety mean to you? You know, I really want to get into the feeling.
Yeah.
And then I'll say, okay, now what's stopping you from having that? And generally people will get very like upset, like, well, I don't know. And generally we'll go into what messages did you get about not being able to dream or not being able to have that or not being worthy of that. And so we'll really look at kind of where these ideas that are holding them back from really getting what they want or having what they dream of, where that comes from. And again, not to villainize anyone, I'm not, you know, our family did the best generally, not always, but they do the best they can. And it's really about understanding what's holding us back. And then we'll go generally, I'll go into timeline work with them and we'll do some subconscious work where I ask them to kind of really get in a kind of meditative state. And then we ask them to ask your subconscious for a memory that comes up. We actually go into the memory as our adult selves and we talk to our younger selves or we interact. Sometimes our younger selves won't interact with us in the memory. It just depends. And we really like from there though, as it comes, I will process it with the client. There's nothing standard because everyone comes into a different memory, has a different experience. And then from there, I just work with whatever comes up.
Yeah.
And then at the end, as Mona experienced, after we come back, I generally like to ground it in something real life. So whatever we found or whatever came up while we were doing the meditative state or hypnosis, some people are scared of hypnosis. So I say meditative because it really is. It's not like I'm not hypnotizing you.
Right. It's not like at the fair, you know, right. like where someone walks across the stage like a chicken.
Right. Exactly. Once we come out of that, I'll ask you about your experience and then we'll ground that. I'll ask you to do something to create an action that grounds whatever came up like here today or this week. Because it's really important. It can be very heavy when we go into the subconscious work. I want you to be able to kind of find a way to ground it and make it real in real time. So that's generally the process.
Yeah. So you kind of alluded to this earlier, but I assume this has to do with kind of your own journey towards confidence.
Yes, it does. I grew up in the Central Valley of California. Why that matters, I don't know, but I grew up on a dairy farm with a family who was very hardworking and worked and very loving. And, you know, my parents, I really can say, like, I'm very close to them. I love them very much. But I grew up with a father who worked very hard and was struggling with alcoholism. And then my mom was, you know, really concerned with him. I mean, she was a wonderful mother and showed up for us. But emotionally, I came out of the womb just like ready to like fight. And I had an emotion about everything. I was even overwhelming for myself, I think. And I was very overwhelming for my family. They never said that. No one ever said that to me, but I could feel that as a young child.
Yeah.
And so I started really feeling insecure about how emotional I was, about how inconvenient that was. Mm-hmm. And so as adults, like, again, that was my default, was to just totally deny my internal experience, to say I'm too sensitive, I shouldn't feel this, I shouldn't be upset, I need to be more quiet, I need to be more aware of what's going on externally to make people happy versus what's going on with me. Mm-hmm. And I really just cut off a lot of parts of myself. And then I became just an angry teenager. Mm. I always got good grades. I was a good kid because I was afraid to get in trouble. But internally, I was just
the good rebel. Yeah, I was just.
And into my 20s, and then I'd find relationships that were just a mess, and people who weren't available because really I wasn't available to myself. And so I just was like, this isn't working, Kaylin, and you've got to do some work. And then my dad got sober, which I think was really like inspiring to me. Mm-hmm. And he did tons of work on himself while I was doing a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And just was like, this, like, I really realized how I didn't really like myself. Like, when mm-hmm. I did my own first inner child work, I really had to admit to my adult self how I didn't even like my inner child mm-hmm. because I believed she was inconvenient. I believed she was too much. I didn't really want to do the work, to be honest, mm-hmm. which is interesting because I'm doing it now. But it was hard because I was just like, she's too much.
Yeah.
But the more I embrace that, now and the more work I've done, I realize that really, I know it sounds dramatic, but that's my superpower, is that, you know, I can do the work that I'm doing because I am sensitive, because I do understand how other people feel, because I can navigate a room and like feel tension or happiness, you know. Now, obviously, I had to learn how to like externalize that because I can't feel every emotion and like show it all the time. But I really, again, internally was like, Kaylin, you're okay. And it's okay that you're sensitive and you can cry a lot and it makes you really loving. And it's probably one of the best things about you, but I still struggle with it today. It's not like I'm at the end of my road, but that's what led me, is just being this kid in a family that really had a lot of other things going on. And it wasn't, you know, I couldn't manage. I don't know that they could, they tried their best. And I definitely couldn't manage myself and was really hard and down on myself about it.
I relate to several things that you said. Like, my mom literally, she sent me a letter where she literally was like, Abby's hysterical for no reason. So my mom did put it in writing that like my emotions were too much.
Yes,
she's like, why does this kid need things? But I do remember, I think that did, like, I remember being at the end of therapy because I was with a therapist in training. This is when I was my like early 20s. So we know how it works. Like, she was probably at the end of her like traineeship. But so on the last thing I said to her, I was like, I don't think I really like my inner child that much. And she was like, I could see it. She was like, that would have been good work for her. Like, right at the end when we're, you know, now knowing, going through that process, she'd probably been like with her supervision, like, I don't know what she's working on. But so she was like, yeah, you should work on that in your future therapy. But so I just relate a lot to some of the things you shared about. That wasn't verbalized to me, even though clearly my mom was writing to people about it. But, you know, you have that sense when you feel like you're too much for people or you're an inconvenience. And, like, mm-hmm. I think we do internalize that sometimes subtly and not even realizing we've, like, carried that with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I carried it for a long. I mean, like I said, I still carry it on some levels. Yeah. Like, some days I literally have to, and I think I did this with Mona, like hand on heart and just mm-hmm. be like, I see you, little one, little Kaylin, who feels like she's too much. Like, I still talk to her to this day. Mm-hmm. But I will have moments where I'm like, I'll apologize for existing, you know? And then some days I'm like, I'm big and I don't care. Yeah. And then some days I'm like, sorry, I breathe. You know, killed are working through it and have to be like, okay, little one, like, I see you, I hear you, you can take up space. So it's constantly, I think, something we're all trying to evolve and work on. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that gets into like how ingrained those messages are, because like you said, when we're children, we can't differentiate if that's real fact or opinion or whatever. But I also like what you were saying about that it's almost this domino effect of like when we don't have that like self-acceptance, or that if we've learned to like hate certain parts of ourselves, that the domino effect is, you know, we're more angrier, perhaps. We get into relationships that aren't like aligned with our actual values, maybe values that we've adopted, or there's like an actual domino effect. And, you know, I'm just sort of, as you were talking, just thinking like, maybe that's an indication that like, hey, maybe that means that something's not working. If you're finding yourself in these patterns of like dysfunctional relationships or a dysfunctional kind of like inner self-talk, something like that.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Because I denied myself so much that I would find partners who would do the same. Mm. You're too much. Ugh. And and there'd be such a part of me that would be like, no, I'm not. Like, I just want to be loved. But I actually truly believed I was too much. So I would
have
people who would feel exactly the same way. Until I started really like honoring my internal experience and knowing that I really wasn't too much. Yeah. Then I made space to attract someone who was like, actually, you're great. I mean, maybe you shouldn't do this one thing, you know, because I'm a little, but like could manage and isn't afraid of me. You know what I mean?
Totally. That's why it's so important, this type of work, is because if we have that, if we know our value and our worth and we actually love ourselves, we won't accept anything less than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's just, and then right, the more you surround yourself by kind of like things that have been replicated in the past, the more it kind of ingrains those narratives and those beliefs about ourselves. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what would you say about, like, let's say someone's on the fence, they're hearing this episode and it's like calling to them, but maybe they're on the fence of like coaching, therapy. What would you say to someone?
In general, I would say, not just to me specifically, but I'd say in general, if you're interested, contact that person. It doesn't have to be me. Mm-hmm. And ask them questions.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I shouldn't say that, but I think most therapists and coaches are people of service.
Totally.
I'm more than happy for someone to call me, to DM me, to write me and say, what do you do? And if I'm struggling this, could you help me? Or tell me more about this, or tell me more about inner child work and what that looks like. I do a complimentary call for 30 minutes. So mm-hmm. ask for a complimentary call. You may be told no, because some people don't do that, and that's okay. But you may be told yes. Get a vibe, understand more of like how this works and if they're a good fit for you and if this is something you're interested in. It may be scary. I always say to my clients, I don't know if you're going to be in a place where you're ready or you're comfortable, but you'll know you're uncomfortable enough that something mm-hmm. needs to change. Yeah. And so if you're there and you're a little bit on the fence, challenge yourself enough, not so much that you feel out of control, but enough to say, let me learn more about this. Let me show up for myself differently, ask some questions. I feel like, especially in the coaching world, but also in the therapy world, ask questions of the coach and the therapist. Yeah. Find out what they've done. Find mm-hmm. out who they've worked with. Mm-hmm. Learn them. I want clients always to remember that it's important for you to find a match. You're interviewing as well. I'll tell clients, or people will write me on like Instagram and be like, if I'm looking for a therapist, what do I need to do? It's like, act like you're going to date them as well. Ask them questions. Make sure they're a match for you.
Yeah.
So that would be what I would say. If you're on the fence, like, challenge yourself to just contact that person and then ask lots of questions and see if you can kind of like vibe it out and see if it's a good fit for you. Try it out.
Yeah, I agree. I like give people the same advice. You know, just I tell people, find 3 or 4 profiles you like, set aside an hour during the week just to call them all and leave messages and see mm-hmm. who you get callbacks from and who you like talking to on the phone. Like that's going to be a big part of it. Like who do I actually like connect with? So, well, this has been so enlightening. I love the depth of this work and mm-hmm. I really appreciate the work that you're doing. And it was awesome talking to you. So where can people find you? Like your social media, website, where should they look?
So I'm old school, you guys. I say this in every interview and I need to get it together, but I haven't. So my supervisor only got referrals. She literally, if you Google her, I love her, but like phone number, address. So you can't find me on a website because I still mm-hmm. haven't made one, but you can find me my email, which is kaylan.dias@gmail.com. So that's kaylan.dias@gmail.com or Instagram, confident with Kiki, KIKI, and spell it all the way out. You can DM me, write me an email. And honestly, even if you just have questions or you're looking for a new therapist, like it doesn't need to be me. I just love to be of service and meet people and contact them. So, you know, I think people think we're like these scary things or these scary people, but we're not. We're just humans just like you. And we're here to help you and answer questions. So they can find me on IG or email. That's it right now. I mean, you could probably Google me, but I don't have my office anymore right now. I'm working from home still, truly. So even that wouldn't necessarily be correct information. So I'd say those two ways are probably the best.
That's awesome. And you're active on IG. Where like, I'm the old school and like, I have a website and like, it's very hard for me to like become active on social media. So, but I'm working on it. We are going to do it. Well, great. Thank you so much. Check out all this in the show notes and we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it. This is awesome.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks again for joining us.
Check out our show notes to learn more about this episode and to find all the ways to follow us.
And remember, if you're curious, try it.